Zion Tishri, Wednesday, the 1st of October, Rabbi Malcolm Herman, The Energy of Tefillah.
My thing was, something that's not even irony this morning, I had to rush my dabbling in Edgware to come here and give a shit on the energy of Tefillah. So, of course, these are made Tefillah. Let me begin by reminding us what the Gemara in Bracha says, and I'm a base, which is remarkably relevant. The Gemara says as follows. Person sees he has davened and not got a response. Yachsav his panel. Shneema kavei al Hashem. Chazak v'yam istibach v'kavei al Hashem. Hashem v'tovei Hashem erev yishi. Thank you. No, just a drink of water would be great. Thank you. So. So from the pasuk, Rabbi Hashem Ori is the makor. The Gemara says in Brachos on the base of base that a person should that tefillah needs constant reinvigoration, constant reinforcement. And the Gemara goes on to say, Arba Devar Arba Tzrichim Chizuk. Four things require chizuk. These are them: Torah, Masim Torah, Tovim Tefillah B'derech Eretz. Torah, Masim Tovim brings a pasuk. Tefillah brings a pasuk as well. Same pasuk. From here we see, as Rashi says, this kave v'es chazek lo tim shal chiyodcha l'chazor v'kave. When it comes to tefillah, that you daven and you fortify yourself and you don't let go and you keep on going. So I've never seen this before, and in terms of perhaps an extra reason why we say Dovah Shem Erev Yishi, but in the easy main tefillah, last possible, Dovah Shem Erev Yishi has both these concepts in. Number one, that if we daven without response or without apparent response, thank you very much. So then, without apparent response, we need to keep at it again, not give in. But certainly, the tefillah requires constant chizuk. Thank you. Okay. Tefillah requires constant chizuk. And I was thinking about it. Why is it that tefillah, I don't know if it's just me, I hope it's not just me, but tefillah is very hard. It's hard. I find it so much easier to daven, to learn for a couple of hours, than to daven with concentration for half an hour. It's not just me, is it? But the Nefesh HaChaim, of course, says, it is just me. Nefesh HaChaim says, Nefesh HaChaim, in his beginning there about tefillah, says two very important sections with Avda B'chol Levavchem. What does it mean with all your heart? First, he says, B'chol Levavchem presupposes that you empty out everything else. B'chol Levavchem means there is nothing else in your heart in that moment in time. Literally, you've decluttered completely to be able to then fill your mind with something else. That's stage one, which is so difficult, Bizman HaZeh. Much more difficult thing than it ever was when we are being constantly bombarded with interruptions from every device that's all around us. And then once you've emptied out your heart, then you have to fill your heart completely with it, with Abbas Hashem, with the Vekas, with all the concepts that come with it. It's a two-stage process. But before one can fill ourselves with the appropriate, we have to empty ourselves with inappropriate. So that's one reason why tefillah is difficult. Secondly, of course, that I think we live in a world which is very, very results-driven. We're always asking, does it work? What was the impact? How do you measure it? And obviously, for tefillah, it's more difficult for us to always see the immediate impact. So let's spend a few minutes on the concept of chizuk tefillah by focusing on two or three key questions. The first question is actually articulated by the Nesiva Shalom. And I want to give a slightly different derech from the one that he gives, but it's a variation of the theme. When the Rambam brings, in the beginning of Perek Aleph of Hilchos Tefillah, what is tefillah? She adam mispalel umischanem lechonyo. Umagid shivachos lekadosh baruch. Person should daven constantly and narrate the praises of Hashem. V'achar kach shol tzaracho, and then ask for his needs. Shud tzarech lahem v'akosha masachunim. Once a person has articulated the praise of Hashem, then a person asks for his personal needs. And that is all bichlal avoda. That's bichlal avoda. In very, very broad brush terms, one could split all of our ruchnias into avoda and maisa. There's actions and there's avoda. We'll define what avoda is a bit later on. And this is bichlal avoda, where we literally work to create the connection with Hashem. So he asks an interesting question. He says, I can understand how magid shavacho, shlekolish baruch is avoda. But asking for my personal needs, why is that avoda? Isn't it simply pragmatics? I have a problem. I can't resolve it. I've exhausted all human possibilities. Or I know there are no, that I need help beyond human possibilities. So simple, I go to the next expert, Kabayoko. And the next expert, it's simply the resource that I need to resolve my problem. Why is that classified as avoda? That's pragmatics. I can't resolve my issue. I don't know where to turn to. I'm turning to Hashem because he has the wherewithal, the resources to resolve it. How do we classify that as avoda? Unrelated question, or apparently unrelated, which he doesn't ask. The Gemara in Brachos and Chaf Aleph, Amud Aleph, says, Halavai shispar adam kolayim kule. Wouldn't it be wonderful? The person would daven all day long. So I once saw, many years ago, I think it was Benny Oyodo, but I must say, in preparation for this year, I couldn't find it again. And I'm 99% sure somewhere it was Benny Oyodo, but it doesn't seem to be on the place. He asked two caches, if I remember correctly. Number one, what does it mean you should daven all day long? We have other things to do. Kosh Baruch Hu demands that we do other things. How can a person daven all day long? He spends a whole day in the base of Medrash davening with chilavat, soif, kolo, yom, kolo. There are other things that we're supposed to do in our lives. Other things mandated by the Torah to do. So first of all, what does it mean in simple pshat? Secondly, the terminology Adam. Why the terminology Adam as opposed to Ish, or Yisrael, Halavayash Yisrael, 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 Kol Yom Kula, why the terminology Adam, not Ish? So I want to share with you an extract, or really it's a maimer of Rav Dessler, which I think it will address all the questions in the derech that he has. And as I say, it's a variation on themes articulated by others. Excuse me, I'm sorry. It's his first, my one is the third krach on Sefillah. And it begins with the following idea. That we tend to think that we have an understanding of emes based on our own understanding of life, our own parameters. And actually, many, many areas of life, we have our own truth, our own emes, I mean, each of us as individuals, and that which is beyond us is difficult to conceptualize as having any reality for me. I'll give you a trivial example, and we define, we have a definition of what various aspects of life mean, and that which is beyond my definition is difficult to conceptualize. I'll give you a trivial example which he doesn't bring, and I'm bringing it, obviously he brings. For example, what is my wife and I often debate, what does it mean, tidy? Right? So my wife might say to me, tidy up the lounge, and then there's a pile of magazines, whatever is in there, so I'll just straighten up the pile, you know, and put my foot into the dustbin to get another couple of weeks out of it. And to my mind, that's defined as tidy. Now, she may have another definition of what tidy is. Another definition of what tidy is. But so we all have our own parameters in defining areas of our lives. What's beyond us, we don't tend to see as part of reality. Now, more serious examples. Example he gives, a person who's a Baal Bitochen. There are multiple levels of Bitochen. There may be somebody who is a Baal Bitochen only in extremis. They're facing a life-threatening situation, God forbid, life and death, or an operation of some sort. Then they turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As I remember one teenager once said to me, when one of his friends was in a life-threatening situation, a teenager that was not a shul goer at all, turned up one Sunday morning at shul, and he said to me these words, he said, "We'll see what God can do now." He didn't mean it in a disrespectful sense. What he meant was, everything else had been exhausted. We'll see what God can do now. That, at least, was he turned up in shul. I'm sure there was a level, if you like, there of it off, and it might have been a flimsy level, or but it was a level. Obviously, someone else who lives with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, b'chol yom, and every maaseh, every episode in their lives, is seen to be an example of hashkacha process in every aspect of life. That's a completely different world of Bitochen. Imagine a conversation between these two people. They couldn't conceptualize each other's worlds. To say to a person, no, actually, I live with Hashem every day. And there are even the trivial aspects of my life, or apparently trivial, I see to be the dimensions of Hashkacha Pratis, or the exemplification of Hashkacha Pratis. We couldn't conceptualize each other's words. Another example he gives us as follows, in terms of honesty. In terms of honesty, what is honesty? So everybody knows that Gezeila is dishonest, but the Gemara in Makkos, which talks about Rav Safra, the Chavdalad in Makkos, so Rav Safra was at the marketplace. And we know the story well, and he was davening. And someone came forward and asked him about a price for an item, and offered a price for an item. And in his own mind, Rav Safra was satisfied with the first price articulated. And the price went up and up and up, because there was no response. But though Emes Milvavet, Rav Safra said that, you know, it would be a lacking in Emes for me to take beyond the price that I was first satisfied with. How many of us would concede that as somehow dishonest if we had gone for the higher price? On the contrary, you might have been encouraged to daven a little longer. But the two completely gedorim of what MS is. And to be able to see beyond one's geder, to be able to see beyond one's parameters, to see that's part of reality, is very difficult to do. But of course, in Ruchnius, we all know that there are aspects beyond where we operate. Rav Dessler, in his first volume, famously articulates the concept of the Kudus of Bechiri in action. That we all have a point of choice, which is our definition, our arena of challenge. Here he has a similar concept, but more in concepts. The kudus of bechira in concepts. Each of us have clarity at a certain level of our ruchnius, and we have our strongest understanding of it, we have our weakest understanding of it. And each of us find difficult to see beyond where we currently are. A practical example. Let's imagine a person is very particular about always dabbing with a minion, but finds it difficult to get there on time. No, somewhere between Baruch Shem and Baruch Hu, that's more or less on time. But they're particularly about davening with a minyan. But somehow they know, we all know, that ideally we should be there on time and before time, etc., etc. But so how do we get there? How do we embrace that? How do we move beyond our level? So he gives two answers. The first answer is that a person has to really become, by the way, he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu assesses us not overall by one particular moment, but where's been our highest point in the year behind, and where's been our lowest point. That's really our ruchnius scale. So that we hope that, in Mitzvah Shem, in years to come, our highest point is higher than our highest point before, and our lowest point is higher than before. That our understanding of ruchnius develops and matures, that we are stronger in both arenas. But how can we move beyond that point? Almost like when you go to the opticians and you can't see beyond that last letter. You just can't see beyond that last letter. For you, it's not part of reality. For you, it's not part of what can ever become part of reality, so it seems. So the first answer he gives is a person has to be very, very strong in their highest point and act with their best level of quality at the highest point. And it's almost as though when you're operating at the highest point of Meisen with that greatest level of clarity, then eventually you'll push through some of the curtains beyond that, and some of the light beyond that will begin to radiate through and hopefully penetrate. So if a person is very particular about davening with the minyan, and it's most nefesh davening with the minyan, and really makes that at least the best avoider they can do, then eventually when you keep doing that, and keep doing that with sincerity and genuine integrity, then it's inevitable that at some stage a person thinks, you know what, I can see now there's something beyond this. I can see this could be part of my reality as well. That's answer number one, how a person can go beyond their current station. The second answer he gives is tefillah. He says tefillah is unique in that tefillah by definition, means that we're operating far beyond our station. Far beyond our station. If you think about it for a second. We're standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu as finite human beings. And we have the audacity to say, Baruch Atah Hashem. Blessed are you Hashem. We're talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the second person. Where else in our lives do we have that second person proximity? Where else in our Aveda do we feel it with that same sense of intensity that one can do to a tefillah? We're standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we're saying to Hashem, second person, person to person, upon him, almost, we're saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's audacity. If you think about it for a second, that's incredibly audacious. That's so far beyond our station. We come into shul, whatever else we were doing, and suddenly we feel we have the right to address a Kodesh Baruch Hu in second person. So tefillah by definition is where we move beyond our station. Tefillah by definition is where we extend beyond our level and beyond our normal vistas and arena of concept. That's what tefillah is. And that's the second methodology of beginning to operate in an area of ruchnius which is beyond our normal station in life, goes beyond our station. But why is that the case? And how does that work? He says it very beautifully that even Moshe Rabbeinu, or Isis HaFerai, what does it mean Moshe Rabbeinu saw the back of Hashem? It means even Moshe Rabbeinu at the highest possible level. Achorai means he could only relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Hashem's actions in this world, but not directly, if you like, to the personality of Hashem. So Hashem's Achorai means that which is the derivative of Hashem, but not the direct of Hashem. However, and these, I feel for me this year, these words are worthwhile recording for the Matzah. Ulam b'tfilah efshel l'chol adam, afilu l'poshet b'yosef, l'agia yosha elav yitzbarach, ki alev b'dveikuso yochel l'agia al masha'ein ha'seichel l'agia b'hasagosef. However, a person, even the most the straightforward, down-to-earth lay person, is able to reach Yasha, direct to Hashem, because the heart, in its association, is able to attain that which the seichel, the intellect, can't conceptualize. So that is what tefillah offers beyond Meisim and beyond everything else. Why is that the case? Simply, Korav Hashem l'chol korav l'chol Hashem k'ruv emes. Hashem is close to those that call him, to those that call him with integrity. Because in tefillah, when we take one step, Kodesh Baruch Hu takes a step towards us. Korav Hashem l'chol korav. Once we're prepared to call to Kodesh Baruch Hu, Kodesh Baruch Hu comes near to us. We take one step, and Kodesh Baruch Hu steps towards us. So for every step that we take, we achieve two steps in our proximity to Kodesh Baruch Hu, in our relationship with Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's the debacus of tefillah. And this brings a very beautiful raya. There's a very long Rambam, which I haven't gone through, but in Parshas Vayetze. And the difference in Kfitzis HaDerech between Eliezer and Yaakov. Both Eliezer in his journeys to find the wife for Yitzchak, and Yaakov Avinu fleeing from Esau, they both had Kfitzis HaDerech. They both had Kvitzer Zederach. And the Ramban there discusses what was the difference between, I think, the different natures of that Kvitzer Zederach. Says Rav Dester, we can see from the Pesukim, but from Rashi, there was a fundamental difference. Because with Yaakov it says, Vayifka b'mokem. Says Rashi, what happened? Is that he went past Aram Maria. Then he said, is it possible I went past the place Sheyispalu Abosai, where my forefathers davened? So he turns back to then go to Aram Maria and his palo to daven. So once he turned back, then the place came to encounter him. With Eliezer, the journey was shortened. He wasn't on his way to Tefillah. He was on his way on another mission, a mission of the Shidduch, of Ma'aseh Mitzvah. So therefore, for him, the journey became shorter, but in a different manner. With Yaakov Avinu, because he was on his way to Davin, even there was only Hachon on the Tefillah, so there, Korav Hashem L'chol Korim, L'chol Hashem Yikruv Emes, there what happened was that the place came to meet him, as is the Derech Tefillah, that when you Davin, then there is an encounter that comes to meet you, and the shortening of the Derech is not simply by the shortening of the journey, but it's by the meeting in the middle of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Mitzpalah. That's why it's by Yifka B'mokim, Lashon Pagia. It was literally an encounter. When you meet somebody else, two people coming together. Very beautiful raya that the Derech Tefillah, even if it's only Hachon Tefillah, the Derech Tefillah is that we have this encounter. So how does that, how do we move forward with that? First of all, the concepts, I think, a very, very beautiful concept. Very beautiful concept that when a person davens, when we can daven with sincerity, then there is this encounter. God who comes to meet us halfway. But Teva is the parameters Hashem created for the world. And Teva is, as Rav Dessa says many times, is really an illusion. We tend to think there are Gvulim, we tend to think there are parameters and boundaries. But really these boundaries are the boundaries Hashem has created in order to serve Him. But if there's ever a stage in time or in life where these boundaries are unnecessary, and on the contrary, these boundaries will frustrate the return of Kodesh Baruch Hu, then these boundaries are suspended completely. We move into a different zone, into a different world, and these boundaries are suspended completely. So Tevar is only an illusion. It's from our perspective, our vantage point, we see things are fixed, we think things are parameters. From Kodesh Baruch Hu's perspective, there's no Tevar at all. It's all Yad Hashem. When a person moves beyond their own boundaries in a tefillah encounter, then, certainly the highest levels, and they have that sense of clarity of that, then they move into a new world. It's almost like ascending a mountain, you're in a completely new world. Therefore, when a person's in a completely new world, the boundaries that we thought were previously fixed, the boundaries we thought were previously immutable, before we davened, can suddenly become fluid, can suddenly become flexible. In other words, the process of tefillah transforms us, and we can find ourselves in a transformed world. If we move beyond those boundaries, which is the capacity of tefillah to do, to take us beyond where we were, we may have started off with a particular bakasha, which we thought, maybe for years we've been dabbling for, and we think, in the Olam HaTeva it's not going to happen, whatever it's going to be. But we move beyond those boundaries, we find ourselves in a new world where Hashem redefines the boundaries in correspondence to the fact that we've moved into a new zone, into a new arena. In essence, therefore, as Rav Dessa articulates, the tefillah is about, it's about the relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. I remember years ago, Rabbi Kupitz from Manchester told me a great mashal, if I just insert it. It's a very, very useful mashal. But in brief, to articulate this idea, that tefillah does not change Hashem, tefillah changes us. So imagine you've got a teenager who's an adolescent and is giving his parents some difficulty, and he's 17 years old, 18 years old, and he wants to buy a motorbike. And the last thing in the world his parents want to do is let their son out on a motorbike. So they resist, and the boy steps up his campaign, as adolescents know how to do, and it goes on for a month, 2 months, 3 months, but they are absolutely adamant, they're resolute, they're not going to buy the son a motorbike. Ridiculous. Then he matures, and goes to yeshiva, and eventually sets up the parnasa, and he's a few years older now, and it's a long schlep, back and forth to work, etc. So one day his parents throw him up and say, you know what, we put a deposit on a motorbike for you. Put a deposit on a motorbike. Who has changed over those years? The parents haven't changed at all. They want him to have what he needed, but the boy wasn't yet ready for that. He's transformed, and therefore they can respond differently. Tefillah does not change Hashem. Tefillah changes us. Through the devekus of tefillah, it changes us. When we are in a different place, then a Kodesh Baruch Hu can respond differently, because the world has changed. We are in a new place, and the world has transformed. If the world has transformed, then the parameters change, Hashem can respond differently. So therefore, if we come back to our original kashas, I think this, that, and as I say, that the Nesivos Shalom in his own way says a similar concept. That, of course, when we ask for a Tzarachim, if we stand for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we ask for a Tzarachim without establishing the Devekis, without establishing the relationship, then it's true, it's just a shopping list to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a bank we're trying to punch the numbers in. But if it comes after the Haggis Shvachim, if it comes after creating the Devekis, if it comes after we recognize 100% that Kosh Baruch Hu is the Makar, Haim, and everything else is, that only then we articulate our Tzarachim, then that itself becomes part of the Avodah. To be able to understand that, the Amchatalei, Kosh Baruch Hu is the Makar, Haim, and everything else there is, and actually it only makes sense to ask for my Tzarachim after I've established a relationship, and at that moment when I ask for my Tzarachim in that very way, that itself becomes part of the Avodah. Because to my mind, Avodah means to work to create the relationship with Hashem. That's what the Avodah is to work to create the relationship with Hashem. In that way, even asking for my own Tzarachim within that framework becomes the articulation of our relationship with Hashem, and therefore Avodah. Well, Avayashi is Pala Adam Kalayom Kuno. If my memory serves me correct, and as I say, I couldn't find it again, this is what the Ben Yehuda says. First of all, it doesn't mean a person should be with the Siddur all day long. But the process of davening should change us, such that even when I leave shul, I have what he calls a tefillah shebalev. Tefillah shebalev, I move into my everyday life with a tefillah shebalev. I recognize the Kodesh Baruch Hu is in charge of everything. So if I have tzarachim, they begin with a tefillah. If I have brachas, they begin with a hodah. It's constant tefillah shebalev. That's what the Gemara means. Halavai shis palatim kol yom kolo means that the process of tefillah should be so powerful and create such a reality of relationship that even after I've put the phone down, the relationship is still latent within me, such that I move through the rest of my life, the rest of my day, with a constant tefillah shivalei. That's the latent tefillah. I might have stopped the vivid tefillah, but the latent tefillah remains part of me. What about the Lashon Adam? So Lashon Adam, as all the Hebrew letters do, is spelled the letters in their full, Minuov. So Aleph is Aleph Lamed Pei, Dalet says it's Dalet Lamed Tov, and Mem is Mem Mem. The hidden letters, if you write them down, are an anagram of the word Mispala. Lamed Pei, Lamed Tov, and Mem is an anagram of the word Mispala. That's why the Gemara says, Levi Shispala Adam. Yes, it's true, the Adam, the overt person, may have closed the Siddur, but inside himself, there should be a constant mispala, a constant tefillah shebalev, very beautiful, constant tefillah shebalev, because the relationship that we've created through tefillah should be a relationship that continues throughout the rest of the day. Rav Hunter notes in his fifth maimon on Rosh Hashanah that this concept that tefillah is devekus, first and foremost devekus, relationship is even found in halacha as well. First of all, quite simply, as Mori Bracha says, that even after you finish davening Shemoneh Esra, so Kolz Mashlo Okaroglov, the Lashon of Morak, Kolz Mashlo Okaroglov, he's still Be'emsa Tefillah. So you've finished Davening Shemoneh Esra, you've said all you have to say, but you haven't taken three steps back. As we know that Lachra is, you don't move back into somebody else's space. Mm-hmm. So Lachra is, but you're still, Gemara says, Be'emsa Tefillah. Why? Because if Tefillah is a relationship, then until you've stepped out of the relationship, you remain in that mode of Tevekis with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. You remain in that mode, you remain with the relationship. Only when you've moved back from the relationship does the relationship end for the moment at that point in time. And very interestingly, we know, the Gemara tells us that if a person's got a choice of two shuls to go to, so you get more schar halicha by going to the shul further away from you. Nowhere else, no, that's the Maral, the foot that brings him, nowhere else do we find he gets more schar halicha by going to the sukkah further away from you. If you go to the sukkah further away, you don't find that. Why is it in Tefillah with Medavka we say there's more schar halicha, more reward for the journey by going to the shul a bit beyond where you are? Well, it's an interesting concept, beautiful concept. It says as follows, that if the concept of Tefillah is kirvas alakim, to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then the journeying is part of that. It's not just a hechsher mitzvah, what facilitates the mitzvah. It's more than that. It becomes part begeder of the mitzvah, it becomes part of the mitzvah as well. If the mitzvah is for me to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then for Shleitzer, we understand that the walking to the shul is part of the process of me beginning the relationship, walking towards relationship, reducing the distance between myself and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore, there is schar for the halicha itself. Therefore, the schar for halicha itself. So even if you go to a further shul, because the actual journey is part of the process almost of tefillah, the achon of tefillah, so you are engaged in the journey for longer. And therefore you engage in that process for longer. You've prolonged the process of the development of relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. hence the scarlet. Also, it brings a Ritvan Sukkah. Ritvan Sukkah is a mitzvah of Aliyah Leregel, that the mitzvah of Aliyah Leregel, in contrast to the mitzvahs, is Oisik from mitzvah mamish. The walking to Yerushalayim, the going to Yerushalayim, it's Oisik Dover. Because Aliyah Leregel is based on Midrash and Tefillah, so therefore the walking to Yerushalayim, on the you're already beginning the relationship, you're already beginning to get closer to Kodesh Baruch Hu, beginning to create that proximity. I want to finish, if I may, a little bit out of my station, if you'll excuse me, with a story, a Chassidish story, which I saw, which gives me a lot of chizuk on Yom Nuroim for Tefillah. It's brought in Sipurei Chassidim of Zev in Rosh Hashanah. it brings the Chernobyl Rebbe, Reb Nochem, and his son-in-law, Reb Chaim, always used to daven together. Reb Chaim, his son-in-law, would always come to him for Yom Nuroim, for Rosh Hashanah. And you can imagine these personalities, when they had spent Mamish Elul for them, was an Elul from the first moment, probably before Elul. By the time it came to the last Mincha of the year, it was Mamish Hoche Kavanos and Madregas unimaginable. Anyway, so Reb Chaim came to daven with his father, Reb Nochem, and the last tefillah of the year, and he's getting his mind together, starting davening, and for some strange reason he couldn't fathom, he just couldn't get his mind in gear. And the most irrelevant thoughts kept floating into his mind, and he tried to focus on the shape of Sakadosh, and he just couldn't. After a few minutes, he thought to himself, you know what, I just have to daven like an ish poshet, miller, word by word, that's it, I've got no choice. And that's what he does. The whole tefillah, miller, simple kavanas without any complications. After the tefillah, his father-in-law came running over to him and said to him, well, what did you do with your tefillah just now? What did you do with your tefillah? So he said, nothing, I felt I could hardly... He says, I saw in Shemayim that your tefillah, davening that way, achieved things for Klal Yisrael that no one else is going to achieve in Rosh Hashanah. So I found that a big chizuk. I don't know if it's just me, again, but you know, you're davening Rosh Hashanah before, and suddenly you remember, oh gosh, I never sent that email. And a ridiculous thing coming to your mind. But simply to understand, that for us to be able to stand before Kodesh Baruch Hu, in these days, be Yosef Korov, when Kodesh Baruch Hu is already close, and to articulate tefillah with Dvorim Peshutim, and to focus on it in a real way, and understand the opportunity of that encounter. That encounter creates the closeness that Kodesh Baruch Hu wants it from us. That itself is an opportunity, Mit Hashem, that we should maximize and utilize, and hopefully Kodesh Baruch Hu will respond for Shefa Bracha.